Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show, and I'm really glad and honored that you joined us today. And I'm confident you'll be glad you joined us. As Ed Sullivan used to say, today we have a really great show. It's November 14th, 2011. It's 8 o'clock a.m. in Phoenix, Arizona, and as usual, it's sunny. I should add it's 10 o'clock a.m. on the U.S. East Coast, since our special guest today is based in Georgia. If you're hearing my voice, then you're either living in Arizona or Hawaii, or you realize that our show is now 1 hour earlier, since you changed your clocks back an hour. Arizona doesn't change our time. I was relieved to see we all survived 11-11-11, which in the U.S. was Veterans Day, in Poland was Independence Day, and maybe some of the listeners will chime in and add other holidays around the world on 11-11. We just put the info in the chat window below the screen, and we'll be able to see that, or call in, and of course, our producer, also known as the Boomer, will put you on or take the answer to your questions and put them into the chat window. So either way, it will work. Anyway, before we dig in, let me remind you, you're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. And as always, we welcome your participation and questions, either by telephone or in the chat window. Now, to get started today and to put today's show in context, let me review the first and second commandments of investing. They're pretty critical to your wealth building, first of all, but secondly, they will put this show into perspective. Hopefully, you recall the first commandment of investing very, very simply, and people think it's a truism, and yet they violate it over and over and over again. The first commandment of investing is buy low and sell high. Now, we have all the archives on www.wealthdna.us. Let me repeat that. That's wealthdna.us. It should be easy to remember. It's the name of the radio show with U.S. at the end, since the show is based in the U.S. Unless you've been in a coma and missed the last few months of this show, you know we've been experiencing extreme volatility in the equity markets all over the world. One day we're blaming Italy, the next day we're blaming Greece, then we're blaming somebody else, but nonetheless, up and down, up and down, up and down, and fairly wild swings, as we talked about on this show. Now, speculators and traders have been reacting to every bit of good news, bad news, and even rumors of news coming. My suggestion in the last 6 weeks or so has been to trade a bull bear or a long short position using index ETFs. And for those of you who have, it's paid off very nicely in the last 6 weeks for many of our listeners and for me, quite frankly. Now, why does it work? That trading strategy takes full advantage of the first commandment of investing. Plus, it takes advantage of the volatility. When the market drops, like Wednesday last week, you buy bullish ETFs since their price is now lower, and sell some of your bearish ETFs since their price is high. So you take a little profit, and you buy some low positions. Then when the market jumps back, and that happened already on Friday, you buy bearish ETFs since their price is now lower, and sell some bullish ETFs since their price is now high. Again, taking profits. The market's gone nowhere, and you've made money twice. I was recently quoted for an article on tips for traders with my saying about the first commandment. And I usually say buy low and sell high. And by the way, sell high and buy low also works, but no other strategy makes money. Believe it or not, now this is going to be hard for some of you to believe, but not all of our listeners felt this strategy was a good idea. The strategy of buying and selling these bull and bear ETFs. Some of them felt it was too risky. They felt that buying and selling positions weekly or even daily on high volatile days, that's just too risky. Taking profits works very nicely. As a matter of fact, I've never lost money taking profits. But why did some of you, like me, adopt that idea, and others felt it was too far out of their comfort zone? Well, the answer is either in their wealth DNA or in the second commandment of investing. And we'll soon see in talking to our special guest, we can even find out what it is in their second commandment of investment that tells us about them. Anyway, what reasons would the wealth DNA framework show us about somebody not adopting the strategy? Well, let's go through the three obstacles. D is desire, which means it would have to be a lack of desire. They don't really want to get rich. They're not really convinced they should earn more. This, by the way, is a problem with about 50%, not 550% of the population. They don't believe they can, or subconsciously do not want to become wealthy. They basically, okay, we're losing something there, reconnecting to the server. I hope that's only me, Pete. But I'm gonna continue, and hopefully you hear my voice. For some reason, I'm hearing the internet. I'm having a notice that the internet is reconnecting to the server. So I'm hoping you hear my voice, that we don't have another we do have a technical glitch. I just don't know the impact yet. The D is for desire, right? So again, some people may not want to be wealthy. The N is for knowledge, or knowledge for some of you English majors, which means they missed several shows when we covered these topics and gave you all the tools. Or is it A, which stands for action, which means not acting on the knowledge despite their desire to be wealthy? Well, we just covered the three obstacles that hold back not only some listeners from doing these things, but hold back 95% of the population from becoming wealthy. All right, and I hope I have a clue here. I don't know if, Pete, you can put a chat message through. I'm going to see what happens if I put a chat message through, because I am getting a reconnecting to server message here, and hopefully that just means my internet. Now, my internet interface is, at the moment, frozen, which is not good news. Okay, it's coming back on here. All right, so that's good. It sounds like we're still on the air, and just my internet fading. So my apologies for this. But yes, it says we're on air, and I don't see the chat window, so it looks like we're having technical problems at the other end. So some of you listening through the internet may have lost my voice. Some of you on the phone, well, hopefully on the phone you're hearing me. But okay, let's move ahead despite the technical difficulties. It looks like the internet is up. There we go. I got the chat window. Let me see. Here we go. No, thank you. Thank you, John, for that update. Okay, that's good. Okay, looks like my thing is there. Pete so far is quiet, so he's trying to not admit anything going wrong. That's good. Anyway, we covered the three obstacles that hold people back. Now, how about the second commandment? Do you remember the second commandment? We covered it just a few weeks back. Know thyself. Yeah, get to know yourself. Could it be that people with the same desire to be wealthy, the same knowledge, and the same ability to take action, some investors may be different than you or me? Huh, hard to believe, isn't it? But you know what? That happens to be true. And that happens to be a big piece of getting to know ourselves, to understand that our comfort zone may be different than the comfort zone that others have. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly our topic today. With that, let me tell you about our special guest. It's Hugh Massey, the president, founder of DNA Behavior International. He's a DNA performance advisor, successful entrepreneur with 26 years, and may even be 27, we'll have to ask him, of unique, diverse, international. By the way, this is not a U.S.-based business or strictly U.S.-based business. It is international in scope. His experience is in human behavior, something I don't deal much with, financial and tax services. There we have a lot of parallels. And family and business advisories. So we have a little bit in common, and yet his focus is much more on human behavior. Now, Hugh Massey is also the author of a book. You ready for this? Financial DNA, Discovering Your Unique Financial Personality for a Quality Life. Ah, there's a hint, unique financial personality. Let's give a warm radio welcome to Hugh Massey. Welcome, Hugh. Thank you for taking some time on Monday morning to share some knowledge with us. Did we lose Hugh? Hugh, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, good. Good. Now I can hear you. Excellent. Thank you. All right. Looks like we're getting all back on track. We're having a little technical problem, sir. Yes, thank you. Thank you for taking some time and for agreeing to share some knowledge with us. Now, Hugh, I gave a brief overview of your background. Now, when you're talking to a new audience, what do you share about your background?
Well, I have a very interesting background for what I'm doing today with financial DNA, because most people would associate financial DNA with the soft side of financial planning, financial decision-making, investing. Whereas by background, I am actually a trained, certified CPA. I started my career as an auditor and then became a tax specialist, working with corporations and high net worth families. So that was sort of the early training and career I had for the first 10 years or so, Ron. And then I left the large corporate world of chartered accountancy, as we call it in Australia, and set up my own financial services business.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Now, hopefully we're not going to confuse both our audience and the rest of the world when they listen through the archives about discussing financial DNA on the Wealth DNA radio show. There is a distinct and strong difference between the two, and yet the ideas are very much in sync. So anyway, what I'd like you to do on this show, and hopefully you'll agree, is to explain how you got started on financial DNA right up through now, how it's helping investors and financial advisors. Are you ready and willing, ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go back a couple of decades. As you said, you started in the corporate world as a CPA and later on started your own business. But let's go back now, just a couple of decades. Let's say the early 1990s. Where were you then physically? Were you still in Australia? Were you over here in the States? Where were you career-wise and where were you planning to go? Where were your aspirations?
Well, in the early 1990s, I actually was living in Southeast Asia working as a tax specialist at the time for Arthur Andersen, where I'd started my career back in 1986. So at that time I was living and working in Southeast Asia. The notions of financial DNA certainly at that time had not hit me. I was really very much on the career track and intending to be so, I think, of Arthur Andersen, although I always had some entrepreneurial aspirations and interests. I had always privately been an investor myself in opportunities that would come my way, really from the time just before I started leaving college.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I always sort of looked at the world a little bit beyond just being in the corporate world, but you know, in the early 90s, I was still pretty young and not really evolved myself or my career to the point of, you know, defining what the future would be outside that corporate world. There was no doubt that when I left the world of Arthur Andersen in 1996, I didn't want to be part of that world anymore. I wanted to be somewhere where I could, you know, grow from my own efforts a lot more and felt that there was a lot more for me to experience, and I had to find that out for myself, you know, by being an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Now, somewhere around that time or in the next few years, you saw a gap, or let's call it a need, in the financial industries. something inspired this idea that eventually became what we now call financial DNA. Share a little bit with us about that inspiration. What were some of those things that, or the confluences, that fancy word says, of factors that kind of led you down this path? What inspired this whole journey?
Yeah, the genesis of financial DNA really came a little bit later on, in around late 1999, 2000, mm-hmm. when one day I was having a cup of coffee with a friend, and she asked me, "Hugh, what are you really passionate about? You don't seem to be that happy necessarily with what you're doing now." And I hadn't been asked that question, I don't think, as bluntly before. I think I had started to address it when I was at Arthur Andersen, but I hadn't answered that question before. And it was really that I wanted to help people become more financially educated by knowing who they were. Now, I hadn't ever, articulated that to anybody, but that was the foundation. And I suppose in today's language, I really wanted people to understand who they were and be able to live with greater meaning. And if they could do that, they would make better life and financial choices. And so that hit me quite hard at the time. And so I went and thought about, well, how am I going to do this? How am I going to put that into practical operation?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back to my clients, and it didn't take me long to work out that I needed to do more for them and play a greater role in their lives than just being an investment manager, a deal doer, looking at numbers, looking at tax returns. I needed to be that sounding board that they could come to with any question, and address their life issues as much as their financial issues holistically. And so that was the premise upon which I started to say to my clients, I'm a wealth mentor, and I want you to work with me on this basis. I changed the fee model in the business away from any sort of transactional type fee to mm-hmm. very much a pure retainer. There wasn't even as much assets under management. It went pretty hard towards the retainer approach. This is back, in 2000 and then 2001. Mm-hmm. And through that, I went looking through my own, as I was on a discovery journey personally, I went looking through my own, day journals for quite a few years back, and I could see these notions of human behavior there and theories that I had about behavior and why people made certain choices and how that was influencing their life and where wealth came from. So that motivated me to actually build a system that would be able to predict those types of behaviors and use that with my clients. And I think I could start to see that I could build, if I got this right, I could build a business beyond my own financial services business from that. So
I was going to say, you probably remember exactly where you were for that cup of coffee. That
I do.
Aha moment.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Exactly.
I remember the place in Sydney very well. It was a beautiful Saturday morning with the sun out in the spring, which is in September time for Australia, because we are all the other way around down there.
Exactly. similar weather, just different times of year.
Right.
Now, during, before we jump into the behavioral aspect, you've been involved with investing, or people that invest, for most of your life, as I have been. What are some of the common mistakes you are seeing them make? And 1999, the reason I asked that question, 99, 2000, was really quite an exciting period in the stock markets, and the whole evolution of the internet and a whole new business models, as people thought. What were some of the mistakes you saw people making?
Well, people see investing just about the bottom line return, and to some degree, in some ways, you can look at it from that angle. But people are often, investing money, at least what I could see, just for the thrill of the chase, are often gambling. If I can make a quick win here and sell out, then that I've done well. So there's a sort of there is no doubt a gambling mentality there. A lot of people define who they are and how successful they are around money. And there was definitely a lot of that around, you know, the late 90s running through 2000, and people basically gambling on all of these stocks with absolutely no idea of what they were or what they were doing. And I think, you know, if you get down to what is financial planning about, is helping people, you know, define themselves and set goals.
Right.
You know, that's the key thing. So, you know, a lot of the time, I think people are after quick wins and the silver bullet when they're investing, and then they get emotional and make pretty poor choices. Whereas it's really about building a plan and sticking to it. And sure, sometimes the market will run ahead of you, and some people will be making money, but if you stick to a plan and, you know, keep yourself rational and focused on that and make, you know, solid decisions with the help of someone, you will generally, you know, you at least get to, you know, the right place as far as achieving your goals. And I think the thing is that people get in over their head, or they have these expectations that investing is easily, just put some money in the market and you know, it's all going to be easy. Investing is a process.
Exactly. Now, did you ever make that mistake yourself?
Of course. I mean,
okay. And I would be lying if
I said I didn't. But at the same time, you know, I always had a plan in place as well. But have I never lost money? I would be lying if I said I hadn't. I mean, I've done it too. But I never really expected that my whole world was going to change from making some of these, you know, some of these decisions. But so perhaps I was a little more realistic than some. But, you know, I think most of us have been in this place, at least for
now,
some
was part,
part
of
our
your,
investment.
Yeah, I agree. And I was going to say, I would obviously admit to the same. And I had some major disasters. So that, you know, I think that's all part of the learning process. And sometimes, you know, seeing other people, you think you could just assume it's their mistake. And, you know, that's not normal to make those mistakes. Of course, it's normal. We just need to find the ways to avoid them. With that, was part of your intention in forming what now is financial DNA to help avoid some of those mistakes, or at least prepare people for them?
I would say part of all of that. I think at the end of the day, you know, that forming DNA, or financial DNA at the time, was just foundationally the purpose behind it, to help people live with greater meaning in their lives. And I think to get people, Ron, to see where the wealth gets created. And where does the wealth get created? For most people, most of it gets created from the use of their human talents, deploying those the right way, whether it's into the right career or setting up the right sort of business, you know, or getting involved in the right activities at a general level. Most of us don't make a fortune out of the stock market or investing. Unless it is actually the business that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And
correct,
that is the case for some hedge fund managers or certain types of real estate, you know, people who are involved in real estate in certain ways, whether they're a developer or a building company or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the wealth is getting created from the use of your, you know, your human talents and your knowledge, not just riding markets. And I think that's a hard thing for a lot of people to see. And so that's where they then, you know, define financial planners as someone who's just there to make the money. I think it's about the overall use of your talents, and that wealth comes when you really look at wealthy people out there, or successful people, at least in a financial sense. They have not necessarily built the wealth out of stock markets.
Fair point.
So I think we all need to look at, what is the source of our wealth creation going to be? And I believe for most of it's around the use of our human talent. And as I said, and I'll repeat myself, that might be for some being involved in some sort of career that's involved in equity markets. You know, even as a financial planner, is really your wealth being created by your ability to invest? I would rather say it's your ability to manage client relationships.
Correct, and helping others
achieve their goals and charge fees for it. It's not just because you've got a talent for investing. If you're an investment manager, maybe. But I think when those sorts of points can be understood, then you can compartmentalize the wealth creation process between the use of your talents and then having somebody help you protect the wealth that, or the money that you get by investing it wisely. I started to, when I was working, you know, a lot as a financial advisor after a while, and particularly once I had these aha moments, when I had a client come into me and say, well, what rate of return are you going to get to me, or how much money are you going to make for me, or you need to tell me when to get out of the market, I just basically looked at them in the eye, even if they were my parents' best friend, and just said, I can't help you, and would just turn them away, because that's just a nonsense place to be in. And I think DNA does is helps people get in touch with really who they are and then build a more defined plan and be able to communicate objectively to people about those sorts of things.
Okay. Let me remind our listeners here that just a month ago, we shared the second commandment of investing on this show, which, by the way, is Know Thyself. And Hugh, for your information, I should share that just almost exactly a year ago, I attended a presentation by Elaine Zito, who you know, about financial DNA and how she uses it to help investors get to know themselves and better match investments to their personality. So those two events kind of gave me the inspiration that maybe financial DNA would just might be the perfect way for investors to get to know themselves. Am I correct?
You are totally correct.
Okay, now, in your view, I don't want to tell you my view. It's less important today. We want to hear your view. In your view, why is understanding that wealth, that financial DNA and understanding ourselves so important to wealth creation?
Well, I think the more that you understand yourself, the more confident that you will be in your life direction and then in the decisions that you make. Because now from understanding who you are, you have a much better framework for making decisions. You'll understand what makes you emotional, what your strengths are, what's going to propel you forward, what's going to get in the way of your success, where are things likely to go wrong for you, how can you deploy your talents. But in the end, I think that growth comes from confidence, and the more that you can do to make yourself confident, the better off you'll be. The other part to this is sustainability, and that comes from being able to make wise choices. And so by knowing your financial DNA, you are going to have a much greater level of confidence and be able to make wise choices, which will give you sustainable performance and keep you on that right track, to growing your overall life. And then you can take that down, Ron. Sorry, I probably want to say something here. But, take that down to investing. Once you have that overall framework, then the investment plan falls within that.
Interesting. I like that. So if I would summarize those maybe 3 points, I'll even add a word in there. So you build that confidence, your decision-making, sustainability, or maybe I would call it even maybe consistency in the way people invest because they understand why they do what they do.
That's right.
Hmm. All right. Now, let's switch gears for a bit. I'm going to go back now, if you will, to how the process works. How is it that you help somebody get to know their financial DNA? It's not just a chat with them to say, oh, okay, you are this style or this style, and we need to do this for you. Share with us how this financial DNA, and I don't know if you want to call it a framework or a system, how it works.
If financial DNA is a system, and it is about objectively measuring your behaviors. And we don't believe that can just come from an interview or even a series of interviews, whether they are over a few weeks or a few years. It takes a very, very long time to truly get to know a person and how they will behave in a range of settings, whether that's in good times or under stress. And, it can take more than 10 years to find that out, if you ever do. And that doesn't matter how good you are at asking questions and receiving information from people. So what I wanted to do was, build a system which could reliably predict people's behavior in various settings and make it objective. And so what we do is we have a very structured online process that can be taken whereby the participant, so let's take it the investor, completes a range of questions online that provide measured outcomes that have been validated by university research. And so this is something that, physically done.
Right.
Through a question answering, very structured question answering process. The questions are intricate in nature, deliberately designed to achieve certain results to demonstrate this predictable behavior.
And I of course know a lot more about this system because I've gotten a chance to try it out first of all with Elaine, and then recently with the online version. And would it be fair to say that financial DNA, the questionnaire, the process, the objective portion of developing this bit of information, the financial personality that somebody has, is similar to a Myers-Briggs or other personality tests, for example, the type that employers will use to identify how somebody's going to fit in with the team? Would it be fair to say that it's similar in nature?
There's at a very, very broad level, there's some aspects that might be considered comparable in terms of the idea of asking online questions or certain phrases of words to generate a profile type or profile scores and put people into a category and therefore know how to deal with them and address them. But there are various dimensions to DNA, financial DNA, that do make it different. One being, one part we concentrate only on the natural behavior, which is how you will behave under pressure. So that's not something that Myers-Briggs necessarily does. And then we have components that specifically address your goals, but also then another component that addresses your financial decision making. So I think the differentiation in financial DNA comes from a completely different structure in terms of that online discovery process than a lot of the employee-centric systems that are out there. Now, this is fairly customized to meet the needs of a robust financial planning process.
Sure. Sure. No, I understand. Oh, the dimensions are very, very different. But when I took the questions, it kind of took me back to that time period of doing some of those. And I don't remember all of the names. Myers-Briggs may be the best known, but there's also we had sales profiling that we did for employees to kind of figure out if they were going to be good salespeople in the type of people that worked for in that company, because not every salesperson is going to be the same, nor does every company need the same type of person. The used car salesman has kind of a stereotype around it. Doesn't always work in a financial advisor's role, for example, because we're not trying to peddle them financial products. We're trying to understand what they do. But so that questionnaire, the style of the personality test, the making me think through in this, a couple hours of doing this test, making me think through my priorities and what's important to me. So it really, really feels like it. But given that, and when I look at a Myers-Briggs or any of these, they've been developed over years and decades to develop, and it sounds like you've done the same. This sounds like a very long and expensive venture you've been on.
It's been long and it's been expensive in all ways. But that's the thing, is at the end. In the end of the day, you can only do things like this if you're deeply passionate about it and you believe in it, and you see that there is a market there. And I think that we're in an interesting time right now, Ron, with such turbulent financial markets, people out of jobs, lots of debt out there, et cetera. People are looking for a different way to live. And I think where our belief is helping people live with meaning is probably becoming truer and truer. Power is coming to the consumer now, so businesses have got to understand the consumer, and financial services operators, whatever level they are in the business, have got to understand who the client is and customize a client experience and engage people at that level. That's the place we're at. No longer can we just hang our shingle out and say, we'll make you a better return than the guy next door, because that doesn't, at the deeper levels, work for people as much as it once did. And it's probably not going to work for them in a financial sense for a long time.
Fair point.
So
now, how'd you finance
it? At a huge inflex point.
No, I totally agree. And as a matter of fact, if we got into to world affairs, I mean, talk about a great timing for having this all in place. And of course, it's all in place. This isn't like you just started this thing. I mean, I've seen the system, I've seen the results. But how did you finance such a major undertaking? I mean, did you go out and get venture capital? I mean, this is a big project.
No venture capital. It's totally out of the pocket of Hugh. So I've used, since day one, my personal resources all the way along. And it's extensive. I mean, we've got, over 50 man years of research and development time and, wrapped up in this thing. So, it's a lot has been put in here. I've certainly put myself, on the line with it, but I intuitively knew that would be the case at the start. You never know how much at the start, but definitely I knew that would happen. But that's part of, an entrepreneurial pursuit. And I
sure
think
is.
Something, like this can have a very large impact.
Now, before we continue, let me remind our listeners that you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. Today, our special guest is Hugh Massey. We're talking about financial DNA. If you'd like to get an email reminder, you can do one of two things. Send an email to ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events, or in the very upper left-hand, if you're online, the upper left-hand corner of the screen, there is a follow button under the Boomer and the Babe's picture, and they will keep you informed of the great shows on the Boomer and the Babe network. Okay, now, Hugh, I suspect in the financial sector, when we look at this kind of profiling and understanding, you're the only game in town. I would imagine it would be way too expensive, too time-consuming for some companies to try to do the same thing and try to compete with you. Am I right?
I believe that is the case, that the advantage I have here is that, I believe the advantage what we have is the fact that I've been in the financial services world, professional services, for all of my career for the past 26 years, dealing with people that require this, not always all in financial planning, but, being a CPA, it's not a lot different in many respects. And so that gives me a great insight practically what people need. I've been an investing client myself, having had my own financial services and professional services advisors relatively extensively. And so this is somewhat all ingrained, and I don't believe that even if you're there in one of the other major employee-centric systems that you were referring to, with some sort of sales system or Myers-Briggs or whatever, that would, to get them, for them to be able to build something like this, even out of all the work and whatnot they've got, would still take them years and millions of dollars.
They
never get there.
And you're right, those are the only ones that could really even consider the entry into this market. So it would seem that if anybody's going to deal with understanding the financial profile, or I think you've used the term investing personality over time, I'm not aware of anything even close. And as you said, all of the others are broadly based in terms of either personality or particular work skills. Now, in Arizona, I happen to know there are two financial advisors, Zito Financial and Udall Financial, who use this system. How do they get trained and authorized or certified or whatever the term is you use in order to appropriately use your system and to have their clients use your system?
What we do is we do have a certification program. It's called a Certified Wealth Mentor Program. Currently, it's run over 3 days, and you learn the various instruments that are within the financial DNA toolkit, mm-hmm. and then there's sort of a process of actually learning to deploy them with the clients. You know, from a start to finish, if someone walks through all the steps with us of, you know, getting trained at an initial level to give it to a client, going through the certification process, it's about 6 months for an advisor. I mean, it's not 6 months of dedicated time, but
sure.
you know, I've been focused of wanting to deploy this and build this into their financial planning practice. We do have some tools, though, like our communication DNA, discovery that is very quick and easy to use and doesn't need a lot of training. So, you know, we do that more through a webinar. Some of the other tools are done through webinars. So advisors don't have to go through 3 days of certification training to access it. It's certainly better if they do, but we, you know, otherwise let them use only certain parts of the system in a much more managed way if they don't go through all the training, you know, in terms of classroom training. Otherwise, it's just webinars.
Okay. Now, there are thousands of financial advisors around just the U.S. and many thousands more around the world. What percentage of those are today trained and certified, or either, you know, percentage or numbers to use the financial DNA system?
Well, it's a good question. You know, we've put through, you know, a couple of thousand advisors who would you know, regularly use the system. In the United States, and then we have now starting to have a growing number in the UK, Australia, and a couple of spots in Europe, mm-hmm. where, you know, and one's just about to start in Malaysia. You know, so we are starting to get it out there wider and wider. I think it's for the reasons that you mentioned before, Ron. First, you've got to get people to know about it, but we've also had to build the systems and refine them to make it easier to access. And I think we're really at that place now. And so we're just at that stage where we're boosting the activity through, you know, integration deals with CRM providers, mm-hmm. you know, other software companies. Some major financial services firms are also, you know, starting to get behind the brand. And so, you know, that's the evolution we're going through. We're moving beyond just being a sort of a very good high-end wealth management solution to a broader-based solution, and that just comes from more knowledge, getting the profile, the process simpler for the various segments of the market. Because financial services is a very complex market. Not all financial planners are the same. Or wealth managers are the same.
No, oh, very, very true.
You know,
and I would think that this... Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Saying we're dealing with, you know, some, and we provide some of our services as consultants, you know, that, you know, we will do family retreats for a family. You know, the other day we were asked one with family north of $100 million to come and help them with certain things. So we sometimes do the family retreat. We don't ever do any investing work. So there's a lot of work that we do. At the upper end and the lower end of the market.
Now, I would think this framework helps those advisors help their clients better. As you said, there are many different types, and their skill sets, of course, differ a lot. But I would think in understanding what a client needs and the way the client thinks would be a major advantage. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the person who gets the most help actually out of this is the advisor. It's the more that you know about yourself, the more you can help somebody else. And the more you untangle yourself from your own blockages, blind spots, or you use your own strengths and talents, the more you're able to help somebody else. So any advisor coming into this thinking that, well, this will be a great thing to give to my client, that's good, but it starts to become great when they actually appreciate the fact that they're the one who's going to grow the most from this by being much more aware as a human being, and that's what's then going to lead to, you know, a greater service. So the advisor, regardless of how much benefit the client gets, the advisor will get far more, and that in the end is better for client service.
And I guess the first step is to understand that we're not all the same. Just because I like investing in real estate doesn't mean everybody else does. And that doesn't mean they're bad people or wrong. they're different. And I need to understand those differences and adjust for those. Good point.
That's right.
Good point. Now, when I filled out the questionnaires, it appeared there were five distinct parts. You mentioned one of them, which is the communication DNA. That was the first one I had done with Elaine. And within each of those, there were a number of subsections, like decision-making or work-life balance. Can you share how many of those distinct parts there are that you're analyzing? Because I haven't had a chance to count them all up. I mean, I've read through my material, but I definitely need to reread it. But, you know, how much – I mean, to give our listeners a feel for how I won't say complex, how extensive the system is. Can you share with us how those subsections – or how many of those subsections are and a few of the examples?
Yeah, the system is extensive, and I think that what we don't want to do today, Ron, is scare off any investor who wants to go through it. And as we were discussing, I think this is very important, as we were discussing with a group of our wealth mentors who were in our office for training a week ago, you know, if you're prepared to take an hour of your time as an investor, you can basically go through this end-to-end. And this will really be the only homework that you ever need to do for your advisor. And I know advisors out there who, in varying ways, are giving clients lots and lots of homework at various periods of time, which in the end is way more than an hour. Now, some are giving them none, and you know, some are letting the clients sort of walk away with 5 minutes' work. You know, if you want to do well as an investor and grow your wealth, then you do need to put some effort in yourself. But what we've done is streamline this into, actually, it's three core parts.
Okay.
So what you were getting, Ron, and the feedback, because I've seen your reports, was a number of reports. But it's three key parts. One is, how do you want to be communicated with, which is the communication DNA. So this sets up
right.
the relationship.
Okay.
That takes 2 or 3 minutes to do. And that's a standalone step. The second step is the quality life discovery, to understand your life purpose, what's life meaning for you, your goals, where are you at in building a quality life. So, you know, some people are doing really well in their career, but their health is not so good, or they're struggling with relationships somewhere, or they haven't got a financial plan in order, and, you know, their finances are a mess. We've all got areas where our life's doing well, where it's not doing so well.
Absolutely.
What's going to help you achieve your goals is your behavior. And so we then get you to complete with that is a behavioral profile, which is more the one like you were talking about before, that's more akin to Myers-Briggs. It's not, but it's in that, you know, broader area.
Correct.
And that's where I think you might have seen multiple parts, because there's really, you know, that step two has got two parts to it. And then the third part's your financial personality discovery, where we're really looking at how do you make financial choices? What's the influence of your education, life circumstances, your belief systems on the financial choices that you want to make. And that's all then setting up to how a portfolio will get built for you. So they're the three, what I call, core independent steps that can be done, you know, all at once for the hour up front or roughly, you know, roughly the hour up front, or it can be split between, you know, a 2 to 5 minute process and then two lots of 20 to 30 minutes to do the rest.
To some extent, like the communication DNA you mentioned earlier is a little bit more straightforward, a little less time. So that might be one of those that, one, whets our appetite, but secondly, already gives us some value to move us forward, and then gives us a little more incentive to a month or 2 months or a week later move forward to the next step. That would sound very logical.
Yes, and we did do it. This is where we've sort of simplified our system, that it's the communication DNA is very easy for the client to do, very quick for the advisor. It doesn't really interfere with anything else, any other processes that they've got going on, but it automatically helps you customize the experience for the client. And any advisor, in my view, would be silly not to want to know how to communicate with the client from the first meeting onwards and create the right experience for the client, make the client feel understood and appreciated, And that's what this does. And it's got an ongoing legacy. That data can sit inside your CRM system, whichever one you use, whether it's Salesforce or Redtail or these sorts of programs. So every time you communicate with a client, you and your staff know what to do. And if that's all you ever do, then you've already well on the way to making it a client-centric process.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me just take an example. We don't have enough time to go through all of them, but let me just take my own communication DNA, and let me share with you and the listeners here that the two that are on the strong side of the 50%, if you will, a little bit higher than maybe the norm, one is goal-setting focus, the other is information need. Okay.
Yep.
And on the flip side, my lifestyle desire and especially my stability need are below norm. What, as a financial advisor, how does that just give us a couple of clues that tells about how a financial advisor would deal with me?
Well, the good thing here is, Ron, that my communication DNA is very similar to yours, so I know this well. So I wouldn't have to adapt myself very much, I don't think, to deal with you. But the key point here would be to focus very much on the vision that you have for your broader life, your goals, what your business goals are, and cut to the chase on that. Too much soft talk, although it might be important to other people, like the stability need people, about your family life. What sports did you play on the weekend? That sort of talk doesn't come up at the outset. That's a little bit later once we've sort of dealt with the business. And, and for one to realize that they're going to have to show you information about the process that they're going to go through with you. So someone would need to, if you were my client, I'd need to make the financial planning process fairly tangible for you. Show you some research, let you go and read some background stuff, experience something first. That would be the key things. Whereas someone who's opposite to you, you've got to make it a very warm, fun, and engaging process, be potentially a lot more sensitive. And, there's other people who are good at doing that.
Correct. And at the same time, every advisor needs to adjust their style a little bit to adjust those clients' expectations. So they don't want to just say, hey, this is a great investment. Go ahead and invest in it with me. As you said, the information need would say that I want to know a lot more detail. They don't have to talk to me about where I'm going in the long run. I kind of have a pretty good feel for that, and I know what kinds of investments, but I need to understand what I'm investing in. I understand a lot more. So that's excellent. I think that gives a feel for, and that's just one of the number of DNA reports that are done through this process. So it really is an interesting piece, and Elaine did go through that with me, and I thought that was in itself already useful. And now as I look through, especially, and I'll jump to maybe the most involved of them, the financial personality, with my description as a strategist, as I read through it, I said, boy, I really would be a challenge for most advisors, just because I'm not looking so much for the hand-holding that many other investors are. So it's a very, very thorough analysis, and I look forward to reading through a lot more of it, quite frankly. Now, if it would be helpful to my listeners, and I think it would be, to understand where I come from and the way I operate, would I violate any of the confidentiality or copyrights if I had a PDF version of my profiles on the website along with an archive of the show? Would that be a problem at all?
No, it wouldn't be. In fact, it would be music to my ears, because when we started this process, a key value of our business is knowing me, knowing you. What I have found is that trust gets built when you're prepared to show others about who you are. And that will be the greatest liberator for other people to wanting to participate, because it removes all
Excellent.
The fears about what it is. And it's also showing you, Ron, as being a leader in this. And saying to people, I've walked this journey, this is who I am, why don't you find out who you are, and then we can get on the path to a much greater experience.
Okay. All right. Very good. No, that's what exactly my thinking was, that if people understand where I'm coming from, that it will help them understand where some of the things on this show may be more comfortable or less comfortable for them, where they'll start sensing some of those differences and then inspire them to do some of that, getting to know themselves, because they already got to know me a little bit. So that'd be excellent. I look forward to doing that, and I will get my assistant get that those links up under this show in the next week or so. Now, I believe when we talk about the wealth DNA framework that it changes over time. We're all born with the same wealth DNA, which is kind of zero. We don't even know what money is, and we don't care. And then over time it grows. But how about financial DNA? Does it change as people grow? They're 20 years old, 30 years old, 40, and as they're retiring later or whatever, does their financial DNA change dramatically, or do you find that it's fairly stable?
Very good question, and it might be a slightly complex answer, and I'll try and break it down.
That's fine.
The financial personality, a person's personality, like you said, for the wealth DNA, does evolve and change over time as we have life experiences, we go through education. So you know, our lives are constantly evolving from when we're little all the way through. But we also have a component of our personality that is what we call hardwired into you, that is more governed by the genetics and the first 3 years of your life. The neural pathways, to be technical, in each of our brains are formed by the time you're 3 years old, and that governs a lot of how you look at life, your perspectives on life, and therefore following that will be your perspectives on how you're going to use money. So what happens is that people, when they're under pressure, whether it's momentarily or for a period of time, revert back to their natural DNA behavior. That's been formed from very early on in life, regardless of what their learnings are. And that's often what you see in the pressure situation. So with financial DNA, we seek to measure both. We measure the natural DNA behavior, because we know that's your go-to revert back type behavior. And then we want to know the influence of your life journey on how you make financial choices. And hopefully, for most part, those two are aligned. But often there will be gaps. That's what needs to be addressed.
Okay, and that's a good point, because on one of the reports very specifically talks about those from kind of the everything being great in your life, which are those that have the biggest opportunities. So that's so it is a mixture. Okay, very, very good point. The Myers-Briggs and all of the others that are purely, if you will, personality kinds of profiles would claim that they really don't change much over life. Good answer. I think I can appreciate the fact that there is a mix of those two aspects in financial DNA, and very clearly within the reports they're separated. Now, individuals, if they want to get their DNA tested, financial DNA tested, as opposed to their genetic, do they contact your organization directly, or do you generally recommend that they talk to one of the financial DNA advisors using and trained and certified in the system?
Yeah, we would rather that a certified wealth mentor is contacted. So if a consumer or investor wants to go through financial DNA, they're more than welcome to contact us. Mm-hmm. And then when we know where they live and that type of thing, and get some basic information, we may then, or we would then, seek to put them in touch with a wealth mentor in their area. Okay. That is the best way.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I always say that only 1 or 2% of the population will ever be truly wealthy. And I'm certainly hoping most of our listeners are among that 1 or 2%. What are some of the linkages between human behavior and wealth creation?
Well, we have the philosophy that behavior drives performance. So the more that you know and master and manage your behavior, the more likely there is going to be performance. And that's going to come down to the behavior piece there then relates to the use of your talents, managing those talents, getting in sync with your life purpose and your values. And if you get yourself in pure alignment on that, then it is more than likely you'll become very confident, make wise choices, and there's a very, very good chance that you're going to grow wealth. If you don't, then get in touch that way with yourself. I think that you can be in that place where you won't have achieved your potential, and you know, whatever that might be. Now, we're not all going to be Bill Gates, and I don't think we can all measure ourselves financially
Correct.
Like that. But I think if you take that wealth, you know, living a wealthy life, if you want to call it that, is a combination in some proportions of financial wealth and life wealth in terms of your life legacy. If you follow the Hugh Massey belief system of behavior drives performance, then you're going to definitely be in that 1%, or a lot, or we could take that 1% to a much higher percentage. The thing is, people get impatient, they get greedy, they get fearful, they don't have the energy or the desire or drives to do more or to stay on track. Or they do one stupid thing that, you know, usually culminated by some previous stupid things, but they usually do one big thing that's wrong, and that sends them spiraling downwards. So I think that, you know, I think this is the key, and then having some sort of plan for it, Ron. You know, most people who achieve their goals actually have some kind of written plan. It might only be half a page, but they have some plan on how they're going to do it.
Some of those words that you used in answering that, I think I'm going to be quoting. I love some of those aspects of you know, one thing that can really get them turned off about investing, or you know, because something they did wrong, but also in just you know, their desire wavering and you know, not taking action. But those are exactly in line with the Wealth DNA framework. So I may be quoting you on a few of those aspects. Really appreciate
Great.
That.
I'll look forward to that.
We've covered a lot of ground today. Before we close, are there some aspects of financial DNA, your background, or some of the work with the advisors that you'd like to cover before we close?
I think that for the advisors, that you know, I would like to see that financial DNA is, you know, a lot more than just a risk profiling instrument, and just. More than just a pure personality instrument. I really want them to see that this is a discovery system that, in an overall sense, is going to help them, you know, build a customized lifetime experience for their client, you know, starting from communication and relationships right through the goals to the achieving of financial performance. And that, you know, this is an ongoing journey. And, you know, I'd rather that they sort of learn to buy in from this perspective, and particularly get the communication piece right.
Fair point. And as you said earlier, that before they start preaching the second commandment about knowing thyself to their clients, they should get to know themselves in order to understand their own style and how they then interact with other people. So a very, very important point earlier, and if those people that missed it, very, very clearly, the advisor gains a lot by getting to know themselves. Now, one final question for you, Hugh. Will we ever reach the point that financial DNA is a required part of financial advisor training, that all of the advisors will require their larger clients to come with their financial DNA reports before they accept them as clients? What are your thoughts?
That would be a great place to be, and the only way that happens is it does ultimately become a consumer-driven movement, that the consumers want to do this so much, you know, and take charge of their financial wealth. I think that we're not going to see it regulatory-wise, although regulations around the world are tightening up dramatically. Mm-hmm. In terms of client discovery, the way in which fees are charged, which are driving, you know, in places like the UK, Australia, the Netherlands, are driving this type of process to happen. It will never quite be a mandated regulatory process, being financial DNA sort of written into SEC codes. Mm-hmm. But I think we can eventually create a more of a consumer movement, whereby the consumer would be smart enough and empowered enough to say, well, you know, I shouldn't be getting a financial plan done unless I know myself, and you know, come and get, and they come and get, you know, the process.
Excellent. No, and I'm obviously becoming a fan. Hopefully, we will help you on that journey of becoming a, if you will, a consumer-driven demand out there to have it. Well, many thanks for joining us, and I hope I can be in touch with you as I work on the semi-final version of my first book, The Ten Commandments of Investing. I'd love to get information from you in there about financial DNA, specifically around the Second Commandment, but other aspects as well, so that people understand that there aren't just commandments, but some people will accept them and live them more readily than others because of their financial DNA. So really appreciate that, Hugh, and thank you very much for being with us.
That's a pleasure, Ron. I've enjoyed it.
Okay, let's wrap up what we've discussed today and put it all together. Recall we talked about the first commandment of investing, buy low and sell high, and how it's paid off pretty well over the last 6 weeks. And if you're already having fun and feel you could handle a little higher risk, you might want to try some two times, some double ETFs. Let me give you a couple examples, SSO and SDS. They move twice as fast as the market. Now, if you're adventuresome as I am, and if you read my financial DNA, you'll see that I am a little bit more adventuresome than others. UPRO and SPXU are triples. That's three times as fast as the market, UPRO and SPXU. I can't guarantee you making money, but you are going to have a lot of fun. But don't sit by idly if you do get involved in those. You need to be watching them daily. They move very fast. Now, we also mentioned that not everybody is the same. Wealth DNA framework gives us some of those differences, and the second commandment of getting to know yourself is a key factor. And our special guest, Hugh Massey, shared with us the financial DNA system that he developed. Very extensive. Trust me on this one. You'll get a chance to see him on our website very shortly. A lot of insight into your investing personality just by answering some questions that are very much feel like a personality test, obviously a little more financial focus, as he mentioned. I will, trust me, spend more time rereading the five analyses I've received. I look forward to getting to know myself a little bit more, and we'll get those up on the website. If you don't make significant strides toward building your wealth in the next few years, chances are one of the DNA obstacles is holding you back, or maybe it's time to get your financial DNA evaluated. And this can be a very powerful step to adjusting your wealth DNA. I remind you, the next Wealth DNA radio show is the fourth Monday of November. That is November 28th, 8 o'clock a.m. in Arizona. 10 o'clock a.m. in Eastern and East Coast, where our guest was today. We haven't finalized the topic guest yet, although I'm working to get a former enforcement branch chief at the Securities and Exchange Commission, a.k.a. the SEC. For those that were planning to join us for an upcoming Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar, we're not going to be able to schedule one in November. We're just way too busy. But in the meantime, feel free to give me a call, send me an email. We'll schedule a meeting. I'll even show you how to make money in real estate without buying, selling, or renting a single property. Yeah, can you imagine it? None of the four T's that most landlords complain about. Now, if you haven't received emails reminding you about this show, just send an email to ron@wealthdna.us. I'll keep you posted about future shows and events. In the next 2 weeks, take some time to think about all the wonderful blessings in your life that you're thankful for and be thankful for them, including getting to know yourself and your investing personality. Happy Thanksgiving and happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.